So let me introduce to you Jan Willem Struijbos. He's currently an associate professor at the Ludwig Maximilians University of Munich. Actually, he sits only one wall away from me in the next office. he studied psychology at the Radboud University of Nijmegen in the Netherlands. And after that, he did his PhD in educational technology at the Open University of the Netherlands. One of his advisors was Paul Kirchner. He had positions as postdoc researcher in Leiden University, and also there he was an assistant professor. His main research topics, this is not difficult to guess, is assessment and feedback, but he has further topics, learning in groups, so collaborative learning, and also more specifically computer-supported collaborative learning. He published a lot about collaborative learning and also peer assessment, and I could go on talk for hours because I know his biography very well. But what we did in the last couple of webinars, I will also ask Jan Willem to do, namely introduce himself a little bit more from his personal perspective, starting in psychology, now being in the learning sciences, maybe talking a little bit about this adventure or about this journey before he starts with his talk about peer assessment. Jan Willem, the floor is yours.
Okay, well, welcome everybody. Very nice to see so many people come to this webinar. Okay, so after this brief introduction, how did I get into all of this? It started out when I was studying psychology, and at Nijmegen University at the time when I was studying, they had 11 different master degrees that I could choose. And out of all 11, I liked half of the courses and absolutely did not like the other half. So I had the opportunity to create a sort of specialized personal masters where I combined developmental, social, and educational psychology already on the topic of collaborative learning, and at the time with adults, not with adolescents. But the adolescents sort of dropped out, and through an advisor, I was already introduced to technology enhanced learning. So I had the pleasure and also the challenge, I would say, of doing my master thesis research with a very early sort of web sessile environment of Scott Emilia and Berider. And from that on, actually, I sort of progressed with a research career at the Open University, doing more specifically research in computer supported collaborative learning, looking at, okay, what happens in groups if you provide roles or you do not provide them roles? Does it lead to better coordination? What happens to the experience of the group process? Does it lead to a better experience, satisfaction, if you will? But, you know, that's a too simplistic word for that. And then when I finalized there, I got the opportunity to go to Leiden University. The only thing that happened there was that I was introduced to a different main topic. Although collaborative learning, in a way, was being studied, there was more focus on assessment. So in order to align myself, I had to look into the assessment literature. And for me, it was an easy pick to choose peer assessment for the interactive aspects that were there, at least that I saw that were there. I wanted to emphasize more. And I think part of this is also what this webinar will be today, because ever since I started out with peer assessment, I'm putting the assessment into collaborative learning research and collaborative learning research into the assessment part. So I'm bridging both areas, and that is also what will be part of the talk today. Shall I just basically continue now?
Well, thank you very much, Jan Willem. So I just wanted to briefly introduce people to some interesting opportunities to give some back channel feedback to Jan Willem directly. using the smileys that you see in the lower right corner of the screen. So most probably you will rather use these ones or not using them, but you can use whatever you like. And there is a vote tab quite close to the chat tab, two on the left of the chat tab. And in under the vote tab, there are additional smileys like this one or that one or that one. And it turned out that for some speakers, it was quite helpful to see from time to time that people are really following and are interested in that. And maybe Jan Willem will also use the voting that is on the left, also under the voting tab a bit later. So you can also give your vote, say yes, abstain from voting, or say no. Okay, so now, Jan Willem, I give it back to you.
Okay, maybe I will use the voting tool after this demonstration. I've been thinking about another solution for that problem. But let's get a bit further into the topic. And before I start, I know that each of you have the slides. My suggestion would be to just follow the order of the slides up to a certain degree, because I've built in a couple of exercises, discussion points, and so on. And they don't entirely work anymore if everybody sort of reads already in advance, in a way. So that's the only disclaimer that I will give about that point. So going to the second slide, which worked better in a lecture, of course, always. But to me, it's one of the slides that I really like to use whenever I introduce peer assessment. You will find it in most of my presentations, also in other lectures that I give about peer assessment. It's this quirky kind of relationship that, for coursework, you're not really supposed to invite another student and do things together, or you cannot really hire a substitute. But then what are you doing in peer assessment? Are you really collaborating, or is someone else doing the work for you? I would be more on the position that we are really collaborating, and that it is thus a sort of relevant activity that can, under certain conditions, foster learning. We will get into that a little bit more. Going to the next slide, slide number 3, and that one is actually animated. So if you click to having everything visual, you will see that there are many different types of peer assessment. So peer assessment, to me, would be the umbrella term, although some would argue that it would be peer evaluation or peer review. Out of all these terms on this slide, so peer assessment, peer evaluation, peer review, peer marking, peer appraisal, peer feedback, peer revision, and peer grading, peer assessment is the term that you find most often when you do a literature research. And therefore, I would argue, is more the umbrella term. Out of these types, peer marking, peer appraisal, peer grading, they are relatively more connected to quantitative approaches to peer assessment. For example, someone has a written product or any kind of performance, and you rate that, for example, on a 5-point Likert scale. Peer evaluation is slightly in between. Peer review, peer feedback, peer revision, they are terms that are typically more used within the writing literature. There's actually quite a bit of literature on English as a second language where a lot of these activities are being done. And interestingly, when I started out, that sort of literature was not really well connected to peer assessment as a more general part, not systematically, and also not necessarily systematically connected to peer feedback. So you could have a body of peer feedback research which was not aware of what the writing research was doing, and vice versa. But these different types, if you would like to call that, it already hints at some of the challenges that we have in this area. Because talking about peer assessment is nice, but if you know what's actually underneath, then it becomes a bit more complicated. Which moves me to slide 4. Slide 4 basically has the general premise of what peer assessment actually entails. The idea is that you have students of similar status that evaluate either quantitatively or qualitatively, for example by comments or feedback, the product of a fellow student of similar status. This definition that I just gave is akin to the definition by Topping of 1998 that many use and is being cited. Currently the definitions also move more into viewing it as an interpersonal process, so more interactive. I'm actually sort of halfway working on the definition, but I also gave one of my other PhD students the assignment to do so. So I'm curious to what that will bring us. And another key point is that it's about responsibility for your own learning and for that of a peer. That is one key point. Now there are several things that we know, and one of the most well-known things, there were several reviews that pointed to direction, and it was a focus when it started out, especially with individual assignments. So
obviously Jan Willem has a technical problem, hope he will be back soon.
Okay, so we're on slide 4, talking about individual students giving feedback to other individuals. Okay, just as a note, I now decided to sign in as a guest, not with my official account. Maybe that is the problem, I don't know. Let's see how many minutes I now get from Flash Meeting. So I was talking about individual students giving a peer assessment to other individual students. And so there are no groups or other constellations, no more interactivity going on. And the early question in the beginning was, to what extent are peers as able to rate or evaluate a piece of work by a fellow student as the teacher would be? And so there were many studies for quite a long period that focused on the correlation, reliability, validity of student and teacher scoring. The earliest review would be Felchikov and Goldfinch of 2000. So they found actually a correlation, I have here 0.60, it was a bit higher, 0.69. And after that, I particularly like the study by Kwang Soo Cho and his colleagues. They not only repeated that, but they also found that, you know, whenever you can get multiple ratings by peers of the same product, the more reliable the rating becomes. So in terms of what we know, that is what we know on this point. There's quite a lot of evidence for this. So there is already sort of this ground argument that you can make that peer assessments are as efficient as teacher assessments, to up to a degree, as teacher assessment would be. So my claim would be that would not be much of a worry to start out with. There are many other things, though, that are necessary to keep into account. Because there are quite some different types. And that leads me to slide 5. Slide 5 shows that, for example, the peer assessment format can be a rating format where I have a 5-point Likert scale and evaluate someone. In terms of collaborative learning, and I might get back to that in more detail, it can be that everybody is being rated for their contribution to the collaborative work, the group work, and we say, well, we have 100 points, go and distribute those 100 points amongst your peers, or you and your peers, that could be a decision, or rank them, right? Who was the best according to a certain criterion, and who was the worst? Or you have this nomination approach, where you can say, well, for each of the criteria, nominate the person in your group who contributed the most, or you can even allow for multiple mentions. In terms of the ones that are most used, it's typically rating. Even with collaborative learning, some use distribution, ranking, nomination. They are rarely used, and I would not also advocate to use them. There are some issues with that. Then, one big component, so apart from rating, you often have the possibility to provide comments. And I equal that here with feedback, because that is usually the qualitative comments, information about not just a score on the Likert scale, I mean, what does a 3 on the Likert scale mean? Not really that much, right? So you would like to have comments and feedback to explain where the peer is or how you evaluate that and what could be further improved. And then there is this issue of interactivity. How interactive do you make it? Is it the case that I am the assessor and I will assess something and that's basically it? It's being left to the SSC to deal with it, for better or for worse? Or is there also something built in where at least the SSC, the recipient of my assessment, is also allowed to reply to that, or at least write down a reply and maybe more actively process it? Apart from that, if you think about collaborative learning, there is also the difference between intra-group and inter-group peer assessment. So intra-group peer assessment would be within the group, such as evaluating each other's contributions to the collaborative learning, and inter-group peer assessment would be between groups. But of course, that is only possible on the final product or the report, because typically you don't really know what happened in terms of the collaborative process in other groups, unless you get complete log files and so on. But anyway, I'm not going to dive into that issue. Would technically be possible, but I don't think it's very likely. Okay, switching then to slide 5, 6, and that one is also from the book chapter that I provided, which goes a bit deeper into a specification of what interactivity could be. So not just thinking about peer assessment in terms of something that one individual student provides to another, but also thinking about what if we allow them to reply to it. So one way peer assessment would be the typical thing. One student provides a peer assessment to another, whether it's quantitative, qualitative, doesn't matter. And for the second task, that will be someone else. And for the third task, that will be someone else. So there's not really a lot going on in terms of interactivity. Reactive will be more interactive in the sense that the SSC gets the opportunity to reply to it, or at least write a response to it, and gets the voice to say, well, I like these parts, I didn't like these parts, this is what I'm going to implement, this is what I'm not going to implement. Reciprocal would then be even more interactive, because there we then assume that if I provide a peer assessment to Frank, Frank will also provide a peer assessment to me. And you can even make that more interactive by saying, well, you can also write a reply to the peer assessment you received. And an even more interactive point would then be that actually the entire peer assessment becomes a negotiation process between the assessor and the assessee. And at that point, it moves really close to peer dialogue, or what we typically sort of dialogic interaction. Might be an issue that I will pick up later on, but there was a border issue. Where does one start? Where does the other one end? I think it's theoretically interesting, but maybe not something that I'm going to dive into very deeply. The next slide then sort of summarizes this sort of process that I mentioned in the beginning, that I'm putting the peer assessment into collaborative learning research and collaborative learning research into peer assessment research. And so that is where the two overlap. It's very efficient for me, works really well, makes it more complicated, I think, for a number of other people, if they are not in both domains simultaneously. So in 2010, together with Dominique Sluismans, we defined three needs for peer assessment. That was also the other paper that I provided. And what we need is conceptual development. So regarding peer assessment more as an interactive process, there is something exchanged. You could even say it might be a specific type form of collaborative learning. I mean, if you go away from the idea that peer assessment would be the same as peer dialogue. Functional development. So on the one hand, more formative peer feedback, looking at feedback issues, When I started out with peer assessment, most of it was focused on the scores and the scoring. Very little was focused on feedback, which to me defines an automatic opportunity for further research, of course. And then there's this aspect of methodological development. There are many studies that are qualitative in nature, that have evaluated students' experiences of peer assessment, their perceptions of peer assessment, and so on. But very few studies that are actually quasi-experimental or experimental, so trying to tease apart which conditions have which effects in this whole constellation. And to me, that aligns in a way to the needs that we have for collaborative learning assessment, because we need to have the individual, but also the group level assessment. And the group level assessment, and especially the collaborative process, when we have lots of groups and students working in those groups, we don't see much of that collaborative process. And peer assessment might be an opportunity for that. We also need to have more about, you know, transitions over time. What happens over time? What happens before, during, and after collaborative learning? And again, peer assessment might be a way to get more grip on what is happening there. And it's the assessing multiple processes and outcomes. So not just cognitive aspects, but also social aspects or motivational aspects. And again, cognitive aspects, you might look at their contributions to a collaborative product, but the social aspects and how actually the process occurred is something where peer assessment could help. Okay, so I hope I didn't talk too long. In terms of a brief introduction, and I'm well aware that I'm tapping into many literature boxes actually simultaneously. That's a continuous challenge for any of my PhD students in trying to cover them. But I try to keep it as straightforward as possible. Okay, for the remainder, I came up with four topics that possibly could be discussed, and I was already informed that most webinars don't make it until the third. So that's where the idea came to have a bit of a vote in terms of what you would like to talk about. So I will mention the topics, and then the question is whether to have a vote or whether to put it in a chat. Let's try to vote first. So I will first state the four topics, and then I will go to topic one to see your vote, topic two, topic three, and topic four. Okay? So the topics are, one is about how can we describe peer assessment contexts? That would be the first topic. The second topic would be, how can peer assessment contribute to learning? The third topic would be, how can we apply peer assessment for collaborative learning assessment? And the fourth topic would be, is peer dialogue the same as peer feedback or not? Okay, so now please try the vote tab, and maybe the group in Munich first needs to fight for 1 or 2 minutes what they would like to see. No, not pick only one. I will first do a vote. You can pick any of them. Let's first do a vote for topic one, and then I will just write down how many people would be interested for that. Then topic two, then three, and then four. Okay, so we do four sets of votes. Okay, so I would like to have your votes for topic one. Okay. Still waiting for the votes from Irina and Mikhail. Okay. The topic of one would be the description of peer assessment contexts. Okay, that's 3-3. Maybe Michael can. Okay, the second one, the second topic is how can peer assessment contribute to learning? Oh, I will have to clear all votes first. Yes. Okay. Okay. That seems to be a clear one. The third topic is how can we apply peer assessment for collaborative learning assessment? Okay, and the last topic is peer dialogue the same as peer feedback or not? Okay. Yep, too much happening at the same time. That's interesting. Okay, maybe that's something that I could explain more if I pick it myself. Okay, so the way that looks now is that topic four, learning, that was a clear one. Then topic four, that is actually the bonus topic completely at the end because I was not sure whether I would pick it, but you picked it. So that is about peer dialogue and feedback. And the third topic would be X equal peer assessment in group work, collaborative learning, or context. Okay, so now it's important to go through the slides to number 14. And this would be my invitation to you to briefly discuss the LMU group amongst themselves. I was informed by Frank that a small group could be created, a separate room for those who are attending by themselves, to briefly discuss the question. I mean, how can peer assessment contribute to learning? And then we will pick it up after that.
So I just created another flash room. It's in the chat. So for those of you who don't want to reflect but rather discuss, you could go there and discuss, and the rest should stay here. And Jan Willem, is 4 minutes, 5 minutes, is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Maybe you could put the topic again into the chat. Is that possible, Jan Willem? Well, to give that a start, my initial thought was, well, peer assessment, how can it contribute to learning? At least, in any case, for many forms of learning, you need feedback. And even if the quality of the feedback is not great, if you don't have any feedback, there is no chance for learning in some cases. Like, for example, if you exercise something and no feedback means you have no idea on the improvement. So a peer feedback is a peer assessment might be at least better than nothing.
Yeah, one of the points I really liked in one of his articles was how it can really encourage students to engage in kind of metacognitive activities and reflect on their own learning activities, which I think is definitely beneficial to learning.
I think what is beneficial is taking the perspective of another student or a group of students and having a look what the others are doing and then relating their work to your own and then reflecting to your work.
Yeah, that cycle of kind of give and take, looking at like what other people are saying and then using that as a means to think back on the work that you just submitted. Yeah, I really like that.
I think also practicing in giving judgments on other people's work is a very valuable skill to do, and a peer assessment practice allows you to train that, to do that.
I then also had another idea is that if we take the reflective, like a dialogue between the assessee and the assessor, then the process of explaining something to another person or a group of students, that would be also a contribution to learning.
Kind of on a separate note, one of the things that kind of surprised me was at least my interpretation of what he seemed to be getting at with his fellow authors was that when he was talking about the reciprocity effect, where you would have, for instance, friends giving other friends higher ratings than another student, somebody who they didn't consider a friend or somebody who wasn't in their group. If I understood it correctly, it seemed like he and his authors were basically saying the reciprocity effect isn't problematic. I mean, it basically doesn't surface as much of a problem that in their work anyway, they didn't find that to be the case. Am I right there, or did you guys get something else out of that? Did you interpret it differently?
I think what he means and the fellow authors means is that it's inherent to the peer assessment practice, those reciprocity effects. So I think we can train students in coping with those effects. So not problematizing them and controlling for them, but just train them how to cope with those effects, and then the process eventually will become more fair, and it won't be a problem, I think.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I've done a little bit of work in terms of peer assessment in MOOC contexts, and one of the things they've mentioned, kind of along the lines of what you're getting at, is the importance of scaffolding. You know, basically training students in peer assessment strategies and how that can work pretty strongly or beneficially to kind of reducing that reciprocity effect. So, thanks. Good point.
I think one of the ways of dealing with friends giving higher rating to friends would be to, I think it's a normal practice to give the chance to assess several peers, not only one. And then if you have, say, two students assessing one work as average and one as excellent, then you can have a look at that. So as a teacher, I mean. And there was another question from Frank. Can peer assessment also impede learning? I think it can if the students don't get enough instruction, or they may just go completely to the wrong direction, and then it may trigger the incorrect perspective of other students. So, yeah, I think that may go wrong somehow.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think one of the things that I found is that it can impede learning insofar as that, in my experience, that students' quality and level of feedback tends to be pretty superficial. For instance, I came from kind of a writing background, and when I would teach writing classes, a lot of times when students would do peer review, and this is in a face-to-face environment, not online, but when they would do face-to-face peer assessments, a lot of times they would focus on super surface level issues such as syntax, punctuation, spelling, that kind of thing, rather than looking at kind of deeper substantive issues such as organization, thesis development, topic development, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yep, I agree. So shall we go back to the main room?
So, yeah, William, should we go on? Is everyone back? Phil and Thijs and Michael, are you back? Okay, that's good. Okay, everyone is back in the plenary, yeah, William.
So I've been keeping a little bit track of aspects that have been mentioned in the chat. I think it would I would first like to go to the breakup group that was in the other chat room and maybe summarize. I think a lot has been said probably in those minutes, but you know, the three key points, and I would invite one of you to summarize them.
I think one of the things that I noticed from our brief conversation was that in general we thought that, yeah, it could definitely support learning in terms of supporting metacognition, reflection on your own learning activities, and then also thinking about the feedback that another person is giving you, and it's how it creates this kind of cyclical feedback. So that was, those were a couple of the things that I heard us talk about.
Okay, and the LMU group, sort of three key points.
Daniel and others, you have no sound currently, so maybe you switch on the microphone again.
Okay, so some of the things that I've also mentioned in the chat, I picked up on, and I've sort of traced the writing a bit, and there were a couple of very interesting comments. And if I would sum it up, it's sort of this, there is this confidence that peer assessment will contribute to learning and it will affect relevant activities for learning. And but if you look at the literature, then it becomes very interesting. And one of the comments that I saw in the chat was that it seems to encourage learning. I think Phil made that comment. And I underlined the word seems. Because looking at the literature, we have not really that much evidence for direct impact on performance or on learning. Peer assessment many times has been performed on, for example, student presentations in class, then they do this peer assessment exercise, and many studies measure student attitudes afterwards. Some of them maybe measure perceived learning. Of course, there is a very high chance for a novelty effect going on there. And there is not really sort of a more cognitive performance-oriented measure of what did people learn, let alone that they do it a second time, and that is then being checked for improvement and for consecutive improvement over multiple tasks, for example. One of the other things I would mention is that while we trace peer feedback in writing, I think that was Sonia Klein. Personally, I would be very interested to see that study. But not just that, but that is one of the ways to get a closer connection between what is actually done in the peer feedback and the extent to which it actually transfers to the performance or the revised performance. We're not doing enough of that to trace it. Peer assessment, I mean, yes, it does provide a guidance for revision and understanding of criteria. One thing, there are quite a number of studies that point in that direction, that it is good when you do peer assessment to discuss the criteria with them or have them be generated by the students, of course, under your guidance, because you have an idea about what the criteria should be. But the assumption is that when students phrase their own criteria, they possibly phrase it in a way that they understand them better than when the criteria are just external and provided by the teacher or the lecturer. Another thing that was mentioned that I like to pick up was the motivational aspect. And that I would tie in directly with sort of my position on collaborative learning, where I would argue it's not all cognitive. And that is something that especially with interactive processes and also with learning, what we tend to do is that, okay, we focus on the cognitive process, focus on the performance and so on, But it's not just all that. I mean, motivation does play in, which brings up the question, is it then positive if peer assessment would only contribute to motivation or enhance motivation? Or would we also say, well, we need a performance improvement? We don't know yet. Also, the same thing with metacognition and reflection. You find that in quite a number of papers, that peer assessment or process itself by looking at the performance of a peer would foster metacognition and reflection. I cannot directly recall the paper that actually measured that, the degree to which cognitive metacognition took place and the degree to which reflection took place or the depth of reflection took place. Now, there could possibly be a mechanism over peer feedback, but studies that really sort of dig into that, you read it a lot in many papers. True. But actually investigating the extent to which that particular process was fostered is something else. Right. And also with the giving as well as receiving feedback, that was also mentioned in the chat, that they both can be beneficial for learning. The interesting thing is that for the past half year, I've been busy with a review on a more interactive model of peer feedback, and that will be also part of topic four, so I will not be telling much about this right now. But the main point of that is that we know a lot about the recipient of feedback and how they treat the feedback and what in the feedback might sort of motivate them to apply it. We don't really know that much about peer feedback provision or peer assessment, or how, for example, the competence of the person who provides it actually flows in or is represented by the peer assessment or the peer feedback, the quality of it. So that is also an open issue. And at this point, I'm going to switch over to the slides, or let me quickly check LMU what their points were. Reciprocal teaching, emotional and conceptual development. Yes, emotions do play a role, but also within peer assessment, the same as within the sort of the general topic of feedback, affective aspects, emotional aspects, motivational aspects have received comparatively less attention, even though the review by Kluger and Denisi is from 1996, where they argued for a feedback intervention model that included motivation. And later on, Schutt, in her review of 2008, she does mention a little bit about emotions and so on, but not really a lot. But what we do know is that, and even if you go to your own experience, when you get a peer assessment, it's not always fun to sort of receive an assessment that points out, well, you know, you could have done a much better job. And it becomes even more interesting if you also know that the person from whom you're receiving the feedback is possibly less expert or knows less in that domain than you do. Now, what do you do then? Do you just brush it aside? Or do you still look at it or try to look at it? Or how do you manage your emotions? We don't know. So going back to the slides, and this is what I wanted to point out on slide 15 and slide 16 is basically a summary of these issues, is that Van Gennep and colleagues, they specifically said, okay, let's look at learning in peer assessment research. And so their initial search was 1,257 articles. There will now be at least 50 more. Then they said, well, it needs to be empirical, it needs to be about peer assessment, and it needs to be something about outcomes. And then they had 83 candidates left. With a detailed examination, they had 59 articles left. So not just only the abstract, but reading the entire paper. And in the end, they included in the review 14 articles, and they found another one later on, so that would be 15, that were actually addressing learning or learning benefits. And about half of them focused on perceived learning. So not really sort of an actual performance taking place. Three points in case that I would like to mention and point to is the work by Sarah Hillen. She actually looked at also peer revision of written assignments, and she had three consecutive assignments. And that is one of the more rare papers that has multiple assignments and looks at the performance and looks also at the improvement of the performance and how peer assessment, peer feedback contributes to that. Another paper that I would point at is actually two papers by Marjo van Zundert in 2012, where she looked at domain expertise. And her finding was that you should not train, for example, peer assessment and domain specific knowledge at the same time. First do the domain specific knowledge part, and then on top of that, train the peer assessment skills. So those that, and both are conducted more in terms of quasi-experimental research and trying to control more variables and trying to look at the actual performance and learning taking place. So this is a very huge issue, I would say. And the projects that I'm involved in and that my PhDs are involved in now sort of try to tackle that issue more and more. The learning issue, the issues, for example, how much competence or how much ability do you need? That would be slide 16. Development of domain-specific knowledge and skills, and then development of peer assessment knowledge and skills. You not only need to develop or practice with applying peer feedback or peer assessment you receive, but also in providing it. And those are all actually pointers for future research, I would say, or where I see the strand of research, the direction that peer assessment should take. Well, one of them, at least. Okay, now I'm going to give it over to the moderator again and see whether we move on to the next topic or also for questions from you. Let's see.
Well, as I'm the moderator, my question to you would be, what would you prefer? So is there any immediate comments or more general questions also to that part of the topic, or would you like Jan Willem to go on and also give LMU the chance to quickly log out and change microphone and log in again? What is your preference?
Okay. Well, while LMU logs out and log back in, then I can tackle the self-assessment question that was just asked in the chat. Self-assessment is an interesting animal because from self-assessment we know that those who are typically competent will underrate themselves and those who are not really very competent will overrate themselves. With self-assessment also comes the issue of accuracy. How accurate you do this, and especially if you would combine that with collaborative learning, where there is also a debate, if you apply peer assessment and self-assessment in collaborative learning, should you then sort of include the self-assessments or not? And there are pros and cons against that. If I would, for example, include the self-assessments, and there are one or two formulas around to convert a group score into individual scores, to say it easily. Self-assessment can distort that process to a degree. And self-assessment is also, and you definitely need to contrast it always with the peer assessment aspect. And what now also plays into self-assessment, it's another paper that I'm working on, is also the ability aspect or competence aspect. Generally, if you look at self-assessment literature, there seems also to be an assumption that, well, you know, it fosters metacognition, it fosters self-reflection, and so on. Yes, you could say that for the students that are relatively competent or high competent. If you do self-assessment, or that would be my contention, I don't have any evidence for that, but I can very well imagine if you do this with lower ability students, and ask them to self-assess. They will continuously be in a situation where they think, yeah, this confirms that I'm stupid and that I'm not able to do this. Oh, yeah, again. Which is not really a very good experience for them. So what kind of baseline level of domain-specific knowledge do we actually need before we even move into self-assessment or see that as an option? But then there are also counter-arguments that would say that, well, does self-assessment necessarily have to be accurate and as accurate as the teacher? Or is self-assessment sort of even more geared towards a formative experience that will tell you where you are at that moment, or to the extent that you can identify it yourself, and then automatically contrast that with either peer assessments or teacher assessments? So it's not a clear-cut case, but and competence or ability of the person self-assessing, just as with peer assessment, is an issue that we need to clear or clarify. Okay. I will quickly check back again.
Well, I understood the lack of questions currently as people's intention that we could go on a little bit in your slides and your topics.
Okay. Then we move to topic number four that had the most votes, which is the topic peer dialogue, peer feedback. And in the slides, that is conceived as sort of the bonus topic. So slide number 32. Now, when I first started out with this peer feedback investigation as a specific instance of peer assessment, one of the aspects that became very clear to me, that would be slide 33, is that when you think about peer feedback, it is rather different from core components in a way are similar to teacher feedback if you look at the structural elements. However, peer feedback is not always accurate. In fact, even teacher feedback cannot always be accurate, although teachers might not admit that, or students might not be inclined to say so, or the smart ones probably will. And it's not always accurate, and also the information value varies. A peer is usually not an authority, like a teacher would be in many cases. Of course, that authority declines a little bit from primary education to university. At least I would hope that university students would question their professors a bit more, if not alone for the discussion. You can learn a lot from that. Don't fear to try. And the presentation format varies of peer feedback. And the core issue with peer feedback that then plays a role is slide number 34, which is then uncertainty. That is sort of the central case that is about peer feedback. About teacher feedback, students have relatively less uncertainty about whether that would be correct, or they simply assume that it is. With a peer, nah, let's see. I don't really know. Like, who's saying that? What does that person know? But peer feedback, you can also see that as an ongoing communicative process, right? Feedback is not just simply a score on the Likert scale, or peer feedback moves beyond. And then you can conceptualize that as, well, if I take this negotiated peer assessment example, and if my performance is evaluated by Frank, but we engage in a dialogue around the performance, we discuss about what I could improve, some aspects I can say, well, you know, I would not really like to improve that or change that. Yeah, sure, I can do that. Where does peer dialogue stop? Does peer feedback begin? What is sort of the difference between the two? And associated to that is that, how would you visualize or conceive this peer feedback and more peer feedback as communication process. So that would be the second discussion topic, and my suggestion would be again to have 5 minutes. And it sort of depends on whether Professor Fisher will be back in that minute, in terms of whether he can create a breakout group, or maybe Daniel Zamenhof can create that breakout group for discussion, or the discussion can take place in the chat. That is actually quite easy for me to follow and keep up with the notes. So the topic is, peer assessment, is it the same as peer feedback? Peer dialogue, is it the same as peer feedback or not? And so 4 to 5 minutes to discuss, exchange, reflect.
Yeah, I think like dialogue is better than feedback, because I think when you're talking about comparing it or juxtaposing it to peer assessment, I think it sets up a greater kind of boundary or delineation between the two. So yeah, I like dialogue better than feedback.
I think leaving this open can make it even better. So you require to give a feedback, but it's not, there is an option to reply to feedback and have a dialogue. So if there is something to say, they could have a dialogue. And making it asynchronous may also help, because sometimes it's, well, I think it's usually much more difficult to have a synchronous dialogue between two students or two groups of students.
Yeah, somehow I think I made a mistake when I joined this group by switching my camera off, so it have to do with only my voice. It's well, I'm also realizing that this question is actually more challenging and sort of includes the necessity to have some prior knowledge on collaborative learning, and in terms of knowing how dialogue is being studied there and how it is being conceptualized. So that makes it actually an interesting question, and also one where tapping into multiple domains becomes necessary to get an overall picture of this. I will take that one up during the more plenary discussion.
Yeah, Willem, should we go back into the plenary? Should we ask the others to come back, small group in at LMU and the breakout group?
Sure, I just need one more minute to collect my notes, and then we can proceed.
Okay, another opportunity for all the others to collect questions and maybe structure your discussion results a little bit.
Okay. Ready to proceed with the second question. I think actually quite a lot of interesting aspects came up. And so I visited the breakout group, and I would now sort of like to give it to the LMU group, because I've also been looking at the chat. So at the LMU group, so what are the three sort of issues that sort of emerged in your discussion?
Hi, everyone. So the first thing that we talked about was that there can be three, so first we said that peer feedback does not necessarily equal peer dialogue, but it doesn't necessarily not equal that either. So it depends on the content and the level of interactivity. So we think that there can be three components here: dialogue, feedback dialogue, and then feedback. With dialogue always being bidirectional, feedback dialogue being bidirectional and feedback focused. So not so generalized, it's just basic dialogue. And then feedback being unidirectional and very directed towards the recipient. And then the last thing that we talked about was the importance of explicit and implicit feedback and how that factors into dialogue and feedback, explicit being much more feedback focused and implicit being much more dialogue focused.
Nice. Like that one. So if I got it correctly, would be dialogue as more bidirectional, peer feedback dialogue also bidirectional, but with a stronger sort of focus on the specific product or thing that is being assessed, and feedback as a really sort of unidirectional process where something is being sent and, well, let's see whatever changes. That is at least how I understood it. Is that correct? Good. Smileys work. So what I also gleaned from the discussion, and I'll pick up one that was made earlier by the LMU group, which I didn't get to, and that was that they also mentioned that, you know, peer assessment, similarity to reciprocal teaching, and that is also part of what is also underneath this question, where you have peer dialogue and reciprocal teaching is specifically around a peer dialogue, not entirely, because you would have one student teaching a specific part of the content to another student, but it does sort of hint at this bidirectional aspect that was mentioned. There was also the question asked, well, you know, I'm going to jump that one for now. We're going to go back to that one later. I think comments that were going in the direction of similarities would be typifying peer feedback dialogue as maybe both being a joint process of meaning making. I think I would sort of remark that I hear a little bit of Jerry Stalin there. And also the relationship to argumentation. And argumentation is specifically one thing that I'm very heavily interested in as part of peer feedback. So not just, you know, stating that something was correct or incorrect, or maybe something that you can suggest, but, you know, why? Why would that be a better choice or an alternative? And of course, then I would like to know ultimately whether peer feedback that contains more justifications, has a better quality of argumentation, would also be more readily accepted or regarded as being of higher quality. But quality with feedback is a bit of in the eye of the beholder. It's very tricky to define that. I think I tried two times in the past with different colleagues, including Franz Prinz, and in the end we sort of abstained from that one. It's a kind of a little green monster. Then it also goes back to the question that was asked, and I postponed it a little bit. Should we distinguish, and what is there to gain? I think the question the other way around would be there. If we don't distinguish, does any either one of them have a right of existence? But whatever we do with that distinction, we need to clarify what we are talking about. And really, I actually quite like the suggestion that was made by the LMU group, this bidirectional, unidirectional thing with peer feedback being more, or peer dialogue, actually, feedback dialogues being more focused in comparison to peer dialogues. Although there you get into a tricky issue when students are collaborating and exchanging around a shared task and so on, would that then be relatively unfocused or relatively less focused? I don't really know how to tackle that one. But it's an interesting theoretical question, I would say. And another thing that was mentioned would be sort of this scaffolding process that we need to support this process of peer feedback exchanges, feedback as a dialogue, which is an important issue, but I would not say that it's necessarily an issue where you can distinguish the two, because peer dialogues and collaborative learning, we scaffold that all the time with scripts, with prompts, and so on. So that is actually something as an instructional support that we can borrow from collaborative learning and implement within peer assessment, because there is hardly work on that sort of area. I know Mario's work, of course, he's doing that. Sarah Hillen has done that with these kinds of scripts. Two of my students will be doing that or something similar to that, working with prompts to foster that process. But it's not yet a general mainstream thing. And to me, that is the value of being in both. And I would argue, you actually need both. You need the peer assessment literature and you need the collaborative learning literature. And both inform the entire process that takes place. And in terms of the slides, I was tempted to put in the next slide, which is kind of complicated because there's a model in there. I'll try to explain it. And it is a model of thinking more about peer feedback as a dialogue. It will appear this year in a German book. Yes, unfortunately, it was first written in German, so now I have to translate everything. But I hope to do that reasonably fast. And it has also been I presented it last year at the early conference, and it has also been accepted for a conference later this year. The model on page 36, and that model views peer feedback as a dialogue, as a dialogic process. It's something and connected to communication theory, and we connected it with the four squares or four sides of the Schulz-Von-Thun model. There's one tricky thing with the Schulz-Von-Thun model that the empirical evidence for the model of functioning exactly the way it does is hardly there. There is a lot of practical evidence from, for example, counseling, consultation, and so on, that the four sides make sense. And in that publication, we also connected the four sides to typical processes and terms and concepts that are used in the feedback literature. And we actually were able to make that mapping. So it doesn't completely come out of the blue. The idea is that when someone composes peer feedback and enters in a feedback dialogue, it is not just the content of what I say. Personal factors, there could be personality factors, could be preferences and so on, they will influence in terms of how I phrase the feedback, but more importantly also the representation of whoever is going to receive it. And it also plays in with feedback seeking. But when I provide feedback, or when you provide feedback, just try to tie it into your own experience, you have an idea of the person you're providing something to. It's not entirely random. So that will flow into your feedback. Do you think that that colleague who is asking you a question, who did a performance, is actually someone who is really good? Well, then you might sort of provide that feedback. But if you think, well, you know, it's not really up to par, not really sure whether anything that I actually say registers, so I might just give them a sort of, you know, two or three quick comments and that's it. So these sort of aspects and how you perceive who is going to receive the feedback will flow into what you actually compose and what you send. But the same thing operates at the other end. There it sort of flows into also the personal factors that you have as a person. There's some research on feedback and personality characteristics on the Big Five. I will not go deeply into that. That can influence how people receive feedback, but also the representation of the sender. And some of the research that I've been doing in the past couple of years sort of played into that. And we played with the competence of the sender, whether the sender would be high competent or low competent, and how that would interplay with different types of feedback and then lead to reception and application of that feedback. So it's the same thing, is that if you receive that feedback, yes, you say, okay, so who's sending me this? Does this person really know something about that or not really? Or in terms of status or formal status, okay, it's a coworker. Well, let's see. Oh, it's my supervisor. I better pay attention. These aspects play into how we subsequently process the feedback that we receive. And so in addition to the two-loop model by Susanna Sis, where you have the external feedback, what is provided, and the internal feedback you generate by yourself when you do the task, because you do evaluate your own performance, not only those two are contrasted, also how I perceive the feedback that was provided, because my perceptions and how I see the other person can sort of slightly change and create a warped perception of what was actually provided. It's very easy to have misunderstandings, not just in communication, but also in feedback. So what we try to do is come up with a conceptualization of feedback that ties into more closely into communicative theories, where we can make the connection between the Forsyth model and aspects of peer feedback, include personal factors that have been researched but not as much, have a strong role for how the sender perceives the recipient or how the recipient perceives the sender, and have more focus on the peer feedback provision process, because that was also mentioned in the discussion, is that both the provider of feedback and the recipient of feedback learn from providing peer feedback or a peer assessment. And that is also part of at least two publications, recent publications by David Nicol in 2010-2014. Very recently there are like two books and I think two articles in Assessment and Evaluation in Higher Education about peer feedback dialogues. But there's not really a conceptual model in terms of how that would take place and how these aspects interplay. Okay, so that was a very brief explanation. If you didn't get it, let me know, send me an email. Hopefully later this year I have the longer version. And then when it comes to some key issues that you can infer from that model, is that, so what do we regard as peer feedback? That's on slide 37. Who do we consider a credible source, and how does that play into how we process the feedback? When do we act upon peer feedback, and why do we act upon peer feedback? These are just a few of the questions that you can ask in this relation. Okay, going over to the chat, because a couple of things have been happening simultaneously, sort of this interference. About anonymous peer feedback and anonymous feedback, yes, there is some research around. It's slightly mixed. There are some studies that some would argue that it should always be anonymous. The problem with anonymity is that it can provide a sort of security, especially at an age, for example, in secondary education, when students are really quite vulnerable to peer evaluations. And so that can be safer to have them do it anonymously, so that all of them also feel comfortable to express themselves. At some point during the educational trajectory, whether that is higher education, university, and so on, somewhere you need to switch from having it only anonymously to non-anonymously. Because on the work floor, what do? We give each other feedback. We give each other feedback all the time, and that is not anonymous. And maybe it would be good for workplace interaction that we practice a little bit more with receiving and providing feedback in actual situations. So anonymity in certain situations, I would say yes, but it's also this long-term perspective that I would slide into the discussion at that point. Okay, I'm going over to the moderator.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask Thijs if he would like to quickly comment on that also in the video chat about the work that is going on anonymity in his work group.
Well, actually, it's one of the central topics in my work also. The study that I posted is stating that the anonymity is preferred by the students. And we are also, I agree with Jan Willem that I think in order to learn students to cope with the reciprocity effect, like trust and the value diversity, psychological safety, I think anonymity can be a very good temporary intervention to help students cope with those feelings of trust and other interpersonal variables. So yeah, a temporary intervention, that is what I tried, and I'm currently analyzing the data. And I can see that in secondary education, they really liked it that it was anonymous. And also for higher education, we decided to do it, do the study once again, and also in two conditions with two times anonymous settings. So I'm working on that, and I will be happy to share when I finalize the data analysis.
Yeah, I would be interested in a comparison of anonymous and non-anonymous settings. And there's also a study, don't know the authors, well, cannot recall actually, it's in that German book chapter. And they actually had four variations where it was completely anonymous, where they had a nickname, non-anonymous, and one more. And they looked at the amount of peer feedback that was provided. And the anonymous situation and nicknames did not necessarily lead to more peer feedback. But then again, that might be setting dependent, might be age dependent. I need to look into that study more. But if you want to know which study I'm talking about, just let me know. I can send those links and publications around, at least the ones that I have collected thus far.
Okay, so we are quite close to the end, according to the time at least. There could be discussed much more, of course. Is there any question, open question, that you would like to ask to Jan Willem or to one of the other participants? maybe I give the floor to you for these final questions. I would have two interview questions in addition for Jan Willem for the end of the meeting. Okay, yeah, you can still raise your hand or jump in with your questions. So we have, okay, Phil, thanks for participating, for your contributions, and bye-bye. We have two questions that we ask all our presenters. The first question is, how would you think is your topic, peer assessment, related to the learning sciences? Why should that be important for the field of the learning sciences? And the second question is, what would be your recommendations for PhD students and maybe also for master students, but I think focus on PhD students with respect to peer assessment. So what can they use if they would like to include aspects of peer assessment in their research? What should they do? What should they be aware of? What are the dangers, pitfalls, but also what are the possibilities, opportunities?
Okay. Challenging questions, I would say. Peer assessment related to the learning sciences. In my view, the assessment processes, and to me also feedback processes, are key processes to learning. That is also what the review by Hedy showed of 2009, that feedback is one of the major mechanisms for learning. And assessment, in a way, is I think it's evolving right now from this summative to this formative to this assessment for learning approach, which now tends to evolve more into student involvement in learning as an emphasis. And learning then is not as much doing something for the sake of the task or because the teacher told you so. It is about the intrinsic aspect that you want to develop yourself further. And for that reason, feedback, assessment processes, I think self-assessment would be probably at the end of the road, where you really have a lot of domain experience and expertise, and also have the background to self-assess. And peer assessment would be sort of a startup process. And it could be combined with co-assessment of the teacher. So peer assessment would already be a step towards not just performing a task for a teacher, but also providing the opportunity for students to take a more meta level, a metacognitive level or a reflective level over what they just did, not just for the sake of doing it, but reflecting about it. But then again, if I tie that into what I said before, then it's about time that we start measuring that. So I do think that peer assessment has much to offer to the learning sciences community, not only for what I said before, but also the relationship to collaborative learning. To me, it is a natural component that can be included in collaborative learning. And then it ties in very well with these dialogic processes in learning, these shared meaning-making practices. And as such, I think that peer assessment can be an important tool for learning and deserves its place within the learning sciences. Now to the second question. What do PhD students need to know when incorporating peer assessment in their research? That would actually relate to topic one that I skipped. So what students would need to know is slide number 25, and I already hinted at that. So it's the literature to read. And I put up all the literature sort of, well, I wouldn't call it databases, but, you know, literature resources that I tap into when I look at peer assessment, collaborative, and so on. So look at peer assessment, web-based or not, online or not, peer feedback, online or not, feedback literature, collaborative learning literature, cooperative learning literature, computer-supported collaborative learning literature, assessment for learning literature, because you need the general umbrella aspect, and then the 360-degree assessment and feedback literature, which covers the workplace area. And that makes it to a very challenging approach because you are tapping into 6, 7 simultaneously in order to understand the process from all angles. So that is the first challenge. So there I would say is that narrow the literature down to the actual setting you're investigating in your PhD research and first of all focus on that. However, if you do something about peer feedback, you cannot just look at peer revision within your specific domain. You need to cover the feedback literature as well and the about 15 reviews that have appeared or that I have been able to collect. And it's the same thing with, I mean, if there is reciprocal peer assessment taking place, you are automatically dipping into collaborative learning research because it's reciprocal. There's an interaction going on. So that depends on the kind of setting you have for your peer assessment. And that brings me to the context. And very briefly, this whole point of context has been, if you flip to slides 27, 28, 29, 30, and 31, which also includes those interactive, three or four types of interactivity that I created, it starts with 17 variables by topping to describe different peer assessment settings, which were clustered into 4 clusters by Van den Berg, which were clustered into 3 different clusters by Van Gennep. Topping slide 30 then proposed a lot of other variables, many, 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 and then in 2011 there were 5 clusters. And this has been a nagging problem, at least it has been nagging at me. And where one of my PhD students, Mariam Al-Kassab, now is moving to is an idea that I had some time ago of trying to see whether can we not recluster this into 4 clusters that make maybe a bit more sense. And that cluster would be 1, the context. So think about your context. And that would be things that are given, like the curriculum. And in order to follow what I'm talking about, you can flip to slide number 12. That is a given. Also how your peer assessment aligns to your context. That is typically a given because your curriculum is stated. And we can think about the second major component would be instructional design. And if you look at all the things that are on those slides and were suggested, most of it is about instructional design, about designing your peer assessment format, how many assessors, how many assessees, intergroup, intragroup, and all these sort of aspects, what kind of rating format. But that is sort of a big component in instructional design. And probably we're going to cluster that further. Then you think about outcomes. What do you want to achieve with your peer assessment? Such as, do you want their peer assessment skill to improve? Do you want their domain knowledge to improve? Maybe even motivation? Or do you want reliability of assessments to improve? And then the last category, and that's sort of the more interesting part, would be the moderators. Because we haven't really been thinking about moderators in terms of peer assessment research, such as interpersonal variables, trust, friendship between students. They are moderators that influence the degree to which you can achieve your outcomes. So we're currently on the way with a big literature review and to try and see whether this holds up. Hopefully by August I will know more. So far it looks promising in this aspect to use those four bigger clusters. They have some relationship with, to some degree, with clusters that were suggested before. But it's more gut feeling at this point. I think I also have good arguments for that, but it's also partly gut feeling that this works a bit better, hopefully. Okay, I will give it over to our moderator.
Thank you, Jan Willem, for these answers. I think if there would have been questions back to you with respect to this, people would have raised their hand. Let me thank you very much for this webinar, also all the other participants, of course. I think what you showed to us is that it is possible to link many strands of research to tackle interesting topics or phenomena and still being able to show how to do cutting-edge research on, for example, this dialogic component of feedback where you will finally get to spirals of reciprocity and all the methodological consequences that you have to deal with there. So I find that especially interesting. And at the same time, having a topic, this was very clear to me from today's discussion, which is highly practical. So there are a lot of practical implications and practical impact that can come from peer assessment for our own work and for the work of our students. So, by the way, you were the first speaker, I think, in the webinar series who managed finally to address all of the topics or nearly all of the topics that you were intending to discuss here. So I'm very much looking forward, maybe I speak also for the rest of the group here, to that review that you are doing with Mariam on this dialogic component and on feedback and on the context aspect. If anyone would like to say something, that would be the opportunity, or just say bye-bye, and then I would think Jan Willem should have the final word, and then we close that session. Thanks, everyone.
I'd like to have a small organizational word. We're having a survey about the webinars at the moment, and I'm going to paste the internet address for that online survey. It's 2 to 3 minutes, and that doesn't mean 10 to 15, it means 2 to 3, and we'll be really happy if you would take your time and fill out that survey. Thank you.
Okay, then just one final word from me. Was really a very interesting experience to do this. I had quite some fun in preparing it, but it was also challenging to meet the different sort of levels. Some of you are working intensely on peer assessment, some of you are not. So trying to bridge and those different levels and also the many sort of different topics and peer assessment and collaborative learning and back forth. But it was a fun exercise to do it like this, and I think it was great participation, good questions, good input, and I really enjoyed doing this. So I hope you at least learned and gained something from doing this. And if you have any follow-up questions about papers I mentioned, authors I mentioned, and so on, just send me an email address. It's also on one of the slides. And then I will drop back a line as soon as I'm able to. Bye-bye.